Could Iran and the United States really be heading for a military clash? Tensions between the two nations reached new heights on Thursday after an American surveillance drone was struck down by an Iranian missile. And while President Trump initially played down the incident, he's now revealed that military strikes were ordered and that he called them off with just 10 minutes to spare when he learned that 150 Iranian lives could be lost. Now, this debacle follows Washington's recent accusations that Iran was behind attacks on two oil tankers in the Persian Gulf and comes as Tehran threatens that it will breach the limit of its stockpile of enriched uranium next week. Now, this is a key element of the 2015 international agreement that was intended to curb Iran's ability to develop a nuclear weapon, an agreement that the US pulled out of last year, but the other parties stayed in. Robin Wright contributes to The New Yorker and is a distinguished fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. And she joins us this morning to bring a bit of context to what looks like an increasingly dire situation. Robin, good morning to you. Thanks for talking to us. Precisely how serious do you think these tensions are in the Gulf?
They're probably the most serious tensions between Washington and Tehran in at least 30 years. This is a real turning point for these two governments that have been at odds really since the 1979 revolution. And I think there's not an interest in war by either country, but they're also on a course that it's hard to see how they get off of. There's no visible off-ramp at the moment.
And does it surprise you to hear President Trump say that America was cocked and loaded literally 10 minutes away from strikes?
Well, I think a lot of Americans are surprised that the president didn't know until 10 minutes before the strike about what the potential casualties might have been. That's the kind of thing that any president should know in the planning stages before he makes the decision. So I think there is a concern about that. There's a second concern that the United States this week has lost its acting Secretary of Defense over a marital scandal from 9 years ago that the FBI was investigating that he led him to forcibly resign, and that we have a new Secretary of State that's been appointed but hasn't even taken over the acting position and would still have to be confirmed. This is not a good time for the United States to be in this kind of crisis. I think there's a broader issue and concern across Washington about, does the president really know what he wants in this confrontation? I think he knows what he doesn't want Iran to do, namely create a bomb, intervene across the Middle East, support militant movements, and engage in human rights abuses. But there is a growing concern that there isn't the kind of methodical plan for how this plays out and how the U.S. achieves its goal alone, since it's broken with the five other powers who supported the nuclear deal.
In the United States, though, proponents of the Iran deal had always argued that a deal, no matter what it was the best option that led the US and Iran away from military confrontation. Those who opposed the Iran deal said that Iran was never a serious, never made a serious commitment to getting rid of its nuclear capabilities anyway, and that you could never really trust them. What does this scenario tell us? Is either of those visions correct?
Well, there's no perfect plan, and the reality of diplomacy is that it always involves compromise. And the calculation by the Obama administration was that at least if you got Iran to take the most dangerous element in the confrontation or the standoff between the two countries off the table, that would diminish the dangers if it ever came to blows. But secondly, that it might open a kind of diplomatic channel through which the United States and its allies in Europe, plus Russia and Japan, might then pursue other common interests dealing with these other issues. The Trump administration has taken the exact opposite view and said we have to deal with all these issues all at the same time, and therefore we're going to walk away from the nuclear deal. And, you know, that's to come at a terrible cost for the United States, because it's now seen as an unreliable partner. Is it willing to walk away from any arms deal it does with any country? After all, this was the most significant nuclear arrangement, non-proliferation agreement, in in almost 30 years. The last few American presidents have promised that no new countries would get the bomb. President Reagan said that about Pakistan, President Clinton about North Korea, President George W. Bush, that Iran wouldn't get a nuclear capability, and all of those things have happened. And now Iran is at the point that it does have the capability, it does have the technology, and all it needs to do is kind of get the equipment, get the fuel, and marry them, and then it within a year has a bomb. So this is where do you go from here?
So I'm very interested in the point you made about there being no coherent or apparent strategy behind what Trump is doing. Can you tell us who is driving decision-making on this matter within the administration? Because obviously a lot of people very concerned about the role of John Bolton, the things that he has said and done actually in the past, and what function he might be playing right now. But across the landscape of figures in the administration, are you clear on who's advising and leading, I suppose, the president in his decision-making?
The two most important players in Washington are John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, and Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State. Both of them, in their previous positions before joining the Trump administration, had repeatedly called for regime change in Iran. John Bolton had been the chief spokesman for an Iranian opposition group, had been a keynote at their annual conference for 8 years, and had gotten up and said, next year we'll have this conference in Iran with a different government in power.
This is the Mujahideen-e-Khalq.
Yes, known as the MEK, which had been supported for many years by Saddam Hussein, had been based in Iraq, and is a kind of, it's an unusual group that blends kind of Marxist tenets with Islamic elements, and it does not have a strong following inside Iran. It does among some of the diaspora, but so
are they a cult? The MEK. I mean, they're often described as cult-like.
I think they are cult-like. It's a strange group. And the point does it represent the alternative in Iran? And I think there's a widespread consensus that it doesn't. But when it comes to your original question, the fact is the president has repeatedly said, as recently as the last few days, he does not want a war with Iran. But you find that John Bolton and Mike Pompeo support the idea of either a radical change in behavior from Iran that amounts to regime change or real regime change. And so there's this, you know, there's tension within the administration. And I think you saw that play out with a decision at the very last minute not to engage in a kinetic strike on Iranian missile sites and radar sites.
So could you talk us through if you take the view that there are multiple scenarios being considered for the way forward here by the administration, what might they be?
Well, the first one is to stay on its traditional course, and that is what it calls maximum pressure, to steadily ramp up sanctions against Iran, to try to get it, to squeeze it to the point economically that the revolutionaries come back to the negotiating table to deal not just on nuclear issues, but all the other things that so irritate the Trump administration. The second course is to kind of strut American military might around the Gulf. And over the past couple of weeks, you've seen the deployment of a carrier task force, B-52 bombers, thousands of additional troops, a ship that has helicopters and Marines and landing craft for expeditionary warfare. So you see that kind of momentum. And part of that could be that the U.S. decides to do what it did in the 1980s during the Iran-Iraq War, and that's escort tankers through the Gulf to ensure that they don't hit mines, as you've seen happen over the last month with the six tankers that have hit mines and suffered serious damage. The third is a kind of tit-for-tat response, which we saw would have seen to some degree if the strike had happened last night against Iran. It's the kind of thing that President Trump did against Syria in 2018 for its use of chemical weapons against civilians. And of course, the fourth option is the one that everyone says they don't want, and that's an all-out war. I think if that did happen, that it would probably look nothing like the U.S. interventions in Iraq and Syria. In other words, I don't think the goal would be to march all the way to Tehran and oust everyone there, but it would be to take out as much of the military tools and forces that so threaten the United States, and that includes whether it's the elite Quds Force, some of its maritime assets, you know, missile sites, that kind of thing, so that there is that the Gulf is deemed safer than it is at the moment.
So I noticed that, I mean, there's obviously a lot of focus on the enrichment of uranium. Iran looks to be potentially breaching the limit on its stockpile of enriched uranium under the deal quite soon. We're maybe just days away from that. I don't want to dive too far into the detail of enrichment levels, but I know Wendy Sherman, the lead American negotiator on the deal, spoke to The New Yorker in June and went into quite a lot of detail about where things stand currently. But why is Iran willing to sort of push this limit, as it were?
Well, this is the third of the three flashpoints, and it could be in some ways the most important long-term, because Iran, since Trump walked away from the nuclear accord, has obeyed all the limits imposed on it. But at the same time, its revenues have plummeted. And so it was exporting 3.2 million barrels a day. It's now down to something around 500,000 barrels a day. That's huge loss for a country with 80 million people. And so Iran has said, well, fewer revenues for us when we were promised economic benefits if we stuck to the terms of the deal. So there's less incentive for us to comply with all the limits imposed on us. And so it's threatened as of July 7th, if there's no guarantee of economic benefits provided particularly by the Europeans, that it will then begin enriching uranium to a higher level than it's supposed to. And that would then in turn change the timeline for it to get a bomb. So rather than under the deal be well over a year, the more it enriched, the less time it would take if it opted to build a bomb.
Well, I suppose we all hope that this is not the pathway to war. We appreciate your insights this morning, Robin Wright. Thank you.
Great to be with you.
Robin Wright is a contributing writer for The New Yorker and a distinguished fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars.